So glad you're here. I'm Julie Ballou, and this is Rape the Podcast. I only have a few more episodes for you in this limited series. And I'm really excited about the interview I've got for this episode. I'll be talking to Phyllis Ferguson, Springfield City Council member from Zone 1. Somehow, all of the recommendations from the Sexual Assault Task Force has landed in her and a few others' lap to turn it into reality. But I finally got to talk to Springfield Police Chief Williams. And while at first I thought maybe he was putting me off for an interview because he was hiding something or just didn't think it was important, he explained to me that this has been a very rough year for his department, starting with a massive shooting in March. A gunman left 5 dead, including a police officer. And then in June, a man struck a Springfield police officer with his vehicle while he was either trying to run the officer over or drive through the front of the police station. The injured officer, Mark Preby, suffered a spinal injury and is paralyzed. And we're going to also chalk up a lot to COVID. They recently had to close their headquarters lobby because of staffing shortages. Imagine having gathered up the courage to report a sexual assault and the police department is closed. Luckily, that only lasted a few days. And it's also been a record year for homicides in Springfield, which follows a national trend. One theory is that many officers are coming down with COVID-19 or being quarantined, which has greatly decreased police presence in the streets. So it turns out that Police Chief Williams wasn't hiding anything and is really invested in helping victims of sexual assault. You'll hear that interview in the next episode. And I'll finish off the series with the Greene County Family Justice Center. They hold victims' future. I also want to tell you about something that has been extremely gratifying for me while making this podcast. I didn't think I was going to make any money with this podcast. I have asked for a few donations and a handful have streamed in. There is a place to donate on the website if you feel compelled, rapethepodcast.com. But the most gratifying element to come out of all of this is knowing that I've helped someone. And I don't want to give out any details because I don't want to mess up any part of her getting her justice, but I know that I influenced at least one person to follow up on an old report and find support from her community, which is giving her strength to find closure. That's something I didn't expect, really. I mean, I wanted to help other people, but to actually see this happening it just brings tears to my eyes. Joy tears, good tears. I hope I've brought hope to victims who have been nervous about calling police or making a report or following through with prosecutors. Because while the past is telling us that that is going to be a challenge and it might even be just as hurtful as the original incident, things are changing. Our communities are getting stronger, they're getting smarter, they're getting better. And I'm proud to be from Springfield, Missouri. Never thought I'd say that. So one beautiful fall day in Springfield, Missouri, just as the lawnmowers were finishing up at Phelps Grove Park, I met with City Council member Phyllis Ferguson.
I'm just not sure how to prepare questions for you because you're in charge of the future, aren't you? You're in charge of what happens going forward. So,
well, the City Council, the 9 members of the council direct... you're talking about as far as the
report.
Yeah. We are, yes. And so it is, and I suppose we could go on about that, but yeah, it's a big responsibility because the task force came out with a wonderful set of recommendations, as
I agree.
You know, to do more than just give them lip service and certainly not to set them on a shelf. It's a lot of responsibility on the part of the council. As the council accepted the report in January of this year, and that's a formal
process. It's a little confusing because it came out in November, so why did it take so long for it to be accepted? And what does that mean it was accepted?
It just got presented in November.
Okay.
And then there's just, it has The council only meets every 2 weeks, and it has to get put on the agenda. And then we had the presentation, we had the lunch presentation. And after, it's really from November to January in the world of governments, not very long.
With holidays in there too.
We only have one meeting in December, and sometimes your agenda's already set. And we had to figure out, you can accept it, but what are you going to do? What are you going to do with
it? Yeah, yeah.
And so that was part of it, is working through how we would go about implementing the recommendations so that it didn't just sit on a shelf, or we didn't just say, oh, this is a great report, but actually assigning it. And it was the city council's task force, so it wasn't something we could just hand off to a department.
Okay.
Because some way city council had to oversee it. You can't assign it to one particular council member. I called for the task force, but I'm not going to be on city council forever. So you can't say, okay, Phyllis Ferguson's going to be the one that's going to make sure things happen. I wanted a hand in it, so the way we decided to do it is we accepted the task force recommendations in their report, and then we assigned it to the Community Involvement Committee. The Community Involvement Committee is made up of 4 members of the council, and they take up matters and issues and tasks that are related to the community. So of the 4 committees that there are, there's the Committee of the Whole, which is the entire council. And then we have a finance, and we have a public involvement, which is, and then we have the community involvement, and then we have one more plans and policies committee. So didn't want to send it to plans and policies because it's more community, it's very community oriented. It's about our community. So that's how we got it to community involvement. And then we're in January, and then in March, COVID hits.
Yeah. I bet that put the brakes on a lot of it.
It put the brakes on everything in terms of our committee meetings. Finance would meet has met a couple of times. Plans and policies has met a couple of times. But public involvement and community involvement just didn't meet because we could have Zoomed. I suppose we could have Zoomed. But just as you may not know, but just this past council meeting on Monday night was the first time that the entire council could meet together with the glass partition.
Okay.
So now then we have a way of meeting. And honestly, I'm an in-person kind of gal, so to me, I hate that we have missed all these months, but now we do have a date set. I contacted Craig Hosmer, who is the chair of that committee, in August and said, we've got to meet one way or the other.
The date is set for the Community Involvement Committee to get together and talk about
On November 3rd, we will meet. And on that, which is the election day, too.
Oh, no.
I just realized that. So when we meet on November 3rd, that will take up the report of the Sexual Assault Task Force.
Who are the other members?
So the other members of the task force are Hosmer, myself, Jan Fisk, and I think Mike Schilling. There are 4 committees, and generally we serve on 2, and so I might be confused that I've got someone from another committee that I serve on.
Yeah, that's a lot to keep track of.
So we'll begin to take that up. And the first thing that I believe will happen is the PIO, our public information office, that department that's headed by Cora Scott was at a lot of our meetings.
Yeah.
We will likely assign to the PIO the task of beginning to look at how we're going to implement this in the community in terms of we're going to put something together to find, I call it a baseline, where our community is right now in terms of their understanding of what sexual assault is.
Can't even imagine how you would do that. How do you do that?
There'll be a group, and that also is one of the recommendations that we made. The task force had just some wonderful, committed folks who were the best in their field in our area, And so I know some of them will be on that, in that group, to determine what the questions are. Matt Simpson, who's one of our council members, who's a great research guy and does that for OTC, has offered to help put that together. So the first step is to get the group assigned who will work on the questions that will go into the community survey.
I'm a little embarrassed. I don't really know how this works. The city council, do you guys get paid to be on the city council? Do you get paid to be in these groups, or is this all volunteer work?
It's all volunteer work.
Holy cow.
Each one of us comes to the council for different reasons. I always believe the reason you should run for city council is because you love our city and you see issues that are of great concern to you that you would like for city government to attack, to look at. I come from Zone 1, which is Northwest Springfield.
Mm-hmm.
We have crime, we have poverty, we have substance abuse, we have domestic violence, we have nuisance properties and people who don't take care of their property to the point that it becomes unsafe and unhealthy and detrimental to the neighbors who live around it, the property values, etc. Those were the issues that brought me to the council.
Mm-hmm. Was that about 4 years ago?
Actually, it was about 5.5 years
okay.
ago. Time flies. There are four zone seats. The city's divided into four quadrants. Then there are four general seats. And those are people who are elected that can live anywhere in the city. The zone council members have to live in the zone that they represent. And then the mayor.
Wow, so we're counting on volunteers to do this for us.
Oh, we call ourselves volunteers, but I put probably on a slow week 20 hours into my position in city council. 25 to 30 is more average. It's a part-time and almost full-time job sometimes. You learn really quick that it's not for the faint of heart. Besides volunteering, you go in knowing you're a volunteer.
So you're going to get attacked by community members and
various
ways.
You're going to get attacked. Yeah, you're going to get called names. Your family's going to get called out. It's become, even in the 5.5 years I've been doing this, it's become more difficult because I think people are more on edge there. I don't know, people, this is a time.
There seems to be a lot more anger in the world.
There does, Julie,
mm-hmm.
And as a public official, we're elected as volunteers. People have this outlook that you work for me and you will take
And I bet they all think you get paid and making tons of money off of this. I guarantee you there's people out there who think you're just getting paid to sit around and do nothing.
Well, and then there are the ones who either they don't know or they think that we take money under the table or that
yeah.
we have some kind of special interest. We get accused frequently by people of, oh, they're lining their pockets on this or that, and I'd be happy to pull my pockets so you can see what.
There's got to be some perks, right? Like free concert tickets or
no free concert tickets.
Free coffee.
So here are the perks. In December, I'm going to go and talk to a group of Cub Scouts about being involved in your community.
Awesome.
That's a cool thing.
Okay.
To going to the elementary schools and talking to kids about city government and how what we do as elected officials. I consider the Sexual Assault Task Force a perk. As a citizen just living in the community, I couldn't have convened a task force on sexual assault and violence had I not been on the city council. That's something that's been near and dear to my heart. Someone asked me right after I came on the council some of my priorities for my term, and I listed one of those. I listed domestic violence, and I do hope we're able to move forward and take that up as we go along. We touched on it with the task force, but there's still much work to be done there.
Luckily, everyone I've talked to so far has really appreciated the foundation that the task force laid, and they've all said this is not going to happen overnight. This is going to take a lot of time to fix, and as time goes on, we'll find new problems that need to be added. And so is there a structure now going forward, now that the task force's job is over? You say you've got the four people on the committee, but that's not all that they're going to do. So how do we as a community make sure to hold
you guys accountable. There's so many people to hold accountable.
Follow what's happening.
Okay.
You know, it's the foundation has been laid, and I can't stress enough how strong I believe that foundation is from that the task force put out with their recommendations. Mm-hmm. It's incremental. We do this, and then we do this, and then we do this. And once we do these things, a lot of it is community education. A lot of this situation is systemic. If you just ask a random person on the street about sexual assault and sexual violence, if it hasn't touched his or her life, they probably don't have a very strong opinion of it. But once you start drilling down, almost every one of us in this community knows someone, whether we know it or not, whose life has been very personally touched by sexual assault or sexual violence. And once it becomes personalized, like it happened to my sister or my cousin or to me or one of my close friends, then I have a different opinion about it. That's almost everything. And so taking it into the community to find out what our baseline is, where we are, and then how do we raise awareness. Asking the right questions is going to be very important to get people to open up and talk about it, not only victims and survivors, but folks who have never given it much thought at all. How do we get them to think about it? And then what do we do?
It's almost we're trying to normalize it, because I think that the minute I can start walking up to complete strangers and asking them, have you ever been sexually assaulted or do you know anyone? Just asking that question, it seems like a ridiculous thing to do, because you don't, that's just
it's
not something you talk about, but I want to make it something that we talk about.
We want to make it something that we talk about, but we also have to be cognizant and sensitive to the victims.
We don't want to re-traumatize
them. Exactly. If you've been sexually assaulted, and that's something that's not, it's something that's very raw with most people that happens to, that person may not be ready to talk about it. But I think the question more is, we have sexual assault and sexual violence in Springfield. What do you think we should do about it? And that begins the conversation.
That is an excellent way to start.
And again, I go back to, once we develop these questions, once we do this community survey, once we begin doing education, and education not only in the community, but education in the judicial system, in the social services systems, in law enforcement. And I have to say, I'm very proud of, I think we've come a long way recently, mm-hmm. within our police department. Getting the grant was huge in order to be able to embed two victim advocates in the police department to work with victims of sexual assault and sexual violence. The Family Justice Center is, in fact, I just got some numbers that I believe it was in July, they saw about 150 individuals, and by September in August, that number had doubled. So that's one of the things that we believe is happening from the pandemic is the amount of domestic violence, child abuse, family violence is increasing pretty astronomically. And we're not going to really know the full extent of it until we come out of the isolation that we find ourselves in due to the pandemic.
Right.
So I think we better be ready for it.
Has there ever been any project that's been similar to this? I know that Springfield did focus on domestic violence over the last few years, and that seems to have really made it easier for us to talk about, for one. And not acceptable, but it's acceptable to talk about it. So I know there was some education there, like maybe at the college. Is that similar to what you're going to do here?
There are several things going on. Lisa Hutchinson, that you talked to in a previous podcast with the Harmony House, Brandy Bartell at the Victim Center, the Family Justice Center, all of the organizations that have come online over the last 20, 25 years have only gotten stronger as the number of folks that they need to provide resources to and services, it creates more awareness in the community. Harmony House does several fundraisers throughout the year, and PSA's
public service announcements on that. And every time your brain gets hit with something about domestic violence or sexual assault, it becomes more of a talking point in the community at large.
That is something that I'm learning, is just how important these shelters are for our community, not just to help victims, but to educate. It seems like they're the ones who are going out and teaching the classes and teaching the police and teaching other advocates. They do need the money. They need the emotional support and the awareness. We need to know about them. We need to know everything that they're doing.
The thing that is so heartbreaking to me is we have these resources in the community like Harmony House, but right now they're just not able to serve the population that needs services.
Is that because of funding?
A lot of it's because during this pandemic time is because of the social distancing. You can't come up to full capacity at Harmony House because you can't put that many people in a space. Funding is always an issue. Just ask the people who run these organizations what they could do if they had double their budgets, and you'd first see a big smile and then they'd start talking nonstop because they know the need. They just are, and they're inhibited by the lack of funds.
As you see it now, someone who's just been sexually assaulted, what would you suggest their steps should be?
That's interesting you say that, because we're talking about being a council member, and I get a lot of interesting calls. A lot of them are sad calls, and about 6 weeks ago, I got a call from an employer on a Saturday morning, and his employee had come to work and she had been sexually assaulted the night before, and he didn't know what to do, and so he called his council person.
Interesting.
So I ended up at that business with my mask on, and this young woman who had just turned 21 with her mask on, holding her and comforting her and talking about next steps for her. And for this young lady, of course, I wanted her to go to the hospital and get a rape kit done. At first, she wasn't going to do that. She was very traumatized and will be for a long time, I'm sure. But by the time we reached the end of our conversation, she had agreed to have her best friend. I offered to take her, but we found a friend that she relied on who was a strong person for her, and that friend was going to take her to the hospital. And that's where they were going to start.
What do you think changed her mind about going?
Well, we talked about a lot of things relevant to her. Her mother was out of town, and she felt like she needed her mother to go through it. She actually had been assaulted before this. This was not the first time. She just felt like the system wasn't... She wasn't comfortable to go to the police department at that time. It wasn't that she had anything negative, but she felt like she didn't and I don't want to give too many...
She knew how hard it might be.
She knew how hard it might be, and she didn't feel like she could answer maybe enough or all of the questions that might help bring the perpetrator into the system, into justice. And then, of course, there's always the feeling that what is justice?
That's a whole...
And that's another task force.
So you suggest getting a rape kit done?
Because if she got a rape kit, then it's there, and it's there forever, basically. So she could change her mind. She could feel stronger. That's hours after something like that happens is a very vulnerable time in someone's life. And so I think that as she... When her mom got back to town, I think that was going to help her, and I believe her mom would be able to help guide her in the direction she needed to go.
It's good that she has family that she can count on for that kind of support.
In this case, this was a person who she had good support from her mom and her dad. She had called both of them. Her mom, like I said, was out of town and was going to be out of town for several days. Her dad lived in a small community outside of Springfield, and she was able to talk to her dad about it, who, of course, was very angry, not at her, but at what had happened. And there's a situation like many where you have this entire family is devastated by this terrible event.
Absolutely. Yeah, as a parent, I just can't.
Oh my gosh.
Head around how that would even work.
Yeah, we all have ideas of what we'd like to do to that person who
hurts our
children, right?
I know, yeah. I know a lot of this depends on the situation and the individual and the circumstances. But I just want to hear you say, however you would like to say it, that the Springfield Police Department is going to take care of them. That this is a good, well-intentioned, empathetic opportunity for you to connect with the police.
And I do believe that. And I talked to her about that. I said that the police department now goes through training so that this is victim-centered with a trauma approach, that it's not just some police officer or detective who's going to take you in a little room, but there may be a victim advocate go in with you, and there certainly will be someone follow up with you. There are hard questions that have to be asked in any investigation, including these types of investigations. And those are difficult questions to ask because they're so hard on the victim. But in order to get the evidence and the information together to investigate and potentially get that crime prosecuted, they have to be looked into. I do believe Chief Williams was with us at almost every one of our meetings or a representative. They were very open. I believe the police department wants to do what they should do and what they can do. Getting the grant is immensely helpful in terms of being able to finance some of the tasks that need to be
done. I love that there's an advocate at the police department now.
A couple. And also the police department works with the victim center, the Family Justice Center. Chief Williams has been very instrumental in putting together the Family Justice Center and getting the new place for it. Instead of in a little office, it has a bigger office now.
Yeah, I need to talk to them. They're on my list.
Definitely talk with them. Brandy Bartel with the Victim Center. Brandy is someone who's very passionate about her work.
Mm-hmm.
And I just love that I was able to work with her and the others. It was a great opportunity for people who are dedicated, who are like-minded, who have these concerns, to be together around one table for almost a year.
Yeah.
And hammer out ways that we can make our community better.
Okay, so we've collected a lot of data already, and we're going to talk to Matt Simpson about collecting more data. And that was like number one on the list of what the report suggested. And then we have education, where I guess that means you're going to go into the schools and talk.
The council, you have to look at what is within the purview of the council. What can the city council do? We can't go into the schools. SPS is its own entity. The school system can invite or accept invitations to go in by different organizations, the same way with the judicial system. That's county and state run, and so the city council, again, doesn't have any jurisdiction over those areas. So it's going to have to be multifaceted in that it's not just the council, but the council is initiating it and inviting other entities that need to be on board and part of changing the face of sexual assault.
Yeah, I think we need other entities, because I just don't think four people are going to be able to handle
it. This group, this Community Involvement Committee, is going to oversee the direction that this second group that's put together, that they go.
Okay.
And that group will be more diverse than just council members. And they will be able to make asks and make invitations to, we'd like to talk to you about this. One of the big things we look at, the colleges and universities here in the city. We know that I'm sure someone's talked to you about the Green Dot program.
Yeah.
Green Dot is at the college level, at the university level, and it's here in Springfield. MSU is using it. I think OTC is using it to some degree. But it's also right now, the Green Dot organization has put together a program all the way down to elementary school.
Oh, wow.
And at high school level. While the task force was convened, we looked at other cities, other communities that were doing what I consider stellar, cutting-edge work.
Can you name any of them?
Probably my favorite is Houston, Texas.
Okay.
I studied Houston, Texas a lot because they just are doing a lot. Yes, they're bigger than we are. Yes, they have more money, but it doesn't mean that we can't do it in Springfield. And one of the things I really loved and would love to see happen in our not only Springfield schools, but for it to ripple out into the regional high schools is a program that they do, the coaches do with the high school football teams.
Oh.
And 15 minutes a week, they talk about sexual assault and sexual violence and attitudes about girls.
Yeah.
And sex. And what do you do? Not just, no, I'm not going to do that, but what do you do if you see someone making sexual comments or comments that are uncomfortable to someone? How do you do that? That bystander approach.
How to intervene, maybe, if necessary.
How do you intervene? And high school kids are very sensitive, and they don't want to get called out, and they don't... We know, we were all high school kids, and so this program addresses all of that. Just like Green Dot, you may not be directly being attacked or having things said to you that are not appropriate or make you feel uncomfortable, but how, as a bystander, do you intervene? Do you make an intervention that doesn't put you at risk or the person who's the target more at risk? When I look at communities, I look at what Houston is doing, and I think that's where I'd like to see Springfield in 10 years for sure.
Were you able to judge whether it's working by statistics?
Yes, they do. They have metrics. They keep good statistics, and that's where Matt Simpson comes on board again, is
good.
That Matt is a great statistician, and we have to do that. In fact, one of the recommendations of the task force is that we repeat the community survey every 3 to 5 years. So we establish that baseline, but every 3 to 5 years, we go back out to the community and we find out where we're at now. What do we need to do to adjust, to better educate, or what areas of our community are we not reaching, and how do we reach them now? Some of the things we think about, you know, we'll do this survey in more than just English, and we'll do this survey more than just online. We want to be able to reach everyone in this community, and how do you best do that? And once you get out there, you start seeing more people that, oh gosh, we hadn't even thought. We had a great group of people, but we know that once this survey unfolds and we start doing this education in the community, this isn't the best fit for this group of folks. You know, how in the faith community, we have a large faith community in Springfield, and they can be exceptionally involved and important in disseminating this information.
Yeah.
The other thing, and...
Do you have anyone that you work with from the faith community? Is there a particular church or pastor who is very outspoken on this subject?
When we move into the next phase of putting this group together, that will put the questions together, that will send us to out into the survey out and the education out into the community, there will certainly be someone from the faith community.
I hope so.
From the faith community. The other thing is from the business community.
Yeah.
And before we even started the task force, oh gosh, I knew from personal experience, women who were being sexually assaulted, domestic violence, and they come to work and they have signs and they have symptoms, but employers don't know what to do. And so I had approached Matt Morrow at the Chamber of Commerce about, and I had talked to some of the high-ranking police officer department about, command staff about that, and come to find out, we have a personnel committee, our human resources committee out of the chamber that meets on a regular basis. So that will be a great avenue.
Yeah.
So we can go, there'll be, when we begin the education component, we'll have something specific for businesses so that as an employer, if I have an employee who comes in and has been sexually assaulted or had sexual violence, I know what to do. I've got a toolkit.
That's great.
So when I talk about community education, it's at many different levels.
It sure is. Yeah, and that's just what makes it seem a little overwhelming to me, is that there are so many levels, so many layers, so many different types of communities. And then, of course, I'm worried about the marginalized population.
And we talked about, I think you probably heard from Lisa Hutchinson, that we did talk about the marginalized population of in our community, and how do we reach them?
I know a woman of color I talked to recently who said, we were taught not to tell. It is in our family. We don't tell the police what happened to us. And so how in the world do you begin to change that routine that's been passed down from generation to generation? That's hard.
You're exactly right. A stranger coming up to you saying, oh, I want to help you because it looks like you've been handled roughly, and your mother having told you, you don't talk about this.
You run the other way.
You go the other way. The other thing I think about is violence, sexual violence in communities that we have language barriers here.
Oh, yeah.
When we talk about community education, fortunately, there are folks out here in this community who have better experience and skills at being able to reach multifacets of our community more than the four people who sit on the community involvement committee. And that's what we rely on. The city council can't do everything, but we rely on the leadership team and the staff at the city to bring the information to us, and then we do our own
research. It seems like you guys are setting up an infrastructure, and the rest of the community needs to go in and fill it in.
That's exactly what will happen here, is the Community Involvement Committee will be the oversight on the Sexual Assault Task Force recommendations and report to make sure that it's implemented. But we'll call on staff in the city and other members of the community to do the grassroots work of it, yes.
To do the legwork.
Then we'll measure. To me, the 3 to 5 year going back and resurveying the community is going to be very important. People are, like you said, people are talking about it. And I see people talking now. Just the number of cases that we are seeing of child sexual violence. And we just had a high profile case in a community just outside of Springfield. And the frustration and anger that people felt and were very vocal and verbal about how the judge did not...
The prosecuting attorney made a deal.
Yeah, the prosecuting
attorney. Why would you accept something like that?
And that wasn't acceptable at any level. Mm-hmm. And again, we go back to, no, it didn't happen to me. It didn't happen to my child or my friend. But I'm still outraged that happened to that 13-year-old child and how it was handled in the system. And judges and prosecutors are sensitive to how the community reacts and sees their decisions.
So vote.
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely.
We're talking to people who, in this podcast, are listening. They've probably had some kind of experience with sexual assault, and they may live in Springfield, but they may not. They may have their own community that they need to try to help and do some work with. Where does the average person just get involved and make a difference? Run for city council?
you can start there. That's certainly not where I started, and it wouldn't be where I recommend you start because it could be a little overwhelming. We use the word collaboration a lot in this community. And I do think that we're, all things considered, a collaborative community. And that's one of the things we talked about in the task force, and one of my concerns. I'm very concerned for the citizens of Springfield, Missouri, but the outlying communities have sexual assault and sexual violence, and they don't have the same resources that we have here. So if you're a victim, talk to a trusted friend, talk to your school counselor, talk to your mom, talk to your cousin, talk to someone who can be your voice right now if you don't feel your voice is strong enough.
That's good.
Get into counseling, because this isn't something, it's not something to be ashamed of, but it's something that you need help with. And if you want to do something, if you want to help make a difference, call the Victim Center, call Harmony House, call the Family Justice Center, call the United Way. There are many avenues that you can go down to help folks who are victims and survivors of domestic crimes and sexual crimes. And also, you can, maybe you're not going to directly work one-on-one with victims, but there are so many things. You'll find your niche, I just know.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. And I'm so glad that there is movement on taking this to the next level, whatever that may be. And I'm sad that it's had to be put on hold because of COVID. But I don't know what else you could have done about that. And so
I hated it, Julie, because I didn't want it to lose its momentum. And I think with the members of the task force, it has not lost its momentum. It has, in fact, it has been on the stove this whole time. The burner's been on under it. It's been simmering. We've been stirring it and just waiting for this moment to bring it forward and get started rolling out the on the recommendation. So for me, and I know for the others, it's not forgotten. It's not set on a shelf. And that's asking what we can do. Ask, what are you doing? How are things coming? Don't let anyone become complacent, because this is not a problem that's going away.
Is it okay if I follow up with you in, say, about 6 months and see what's been done?
Mm-hmm. I'd love for you to.
Okay.
And you're welcome to come to the community involved. Like I said, November 4th is our first meeting, and you're welcome to come. We'll take up a couple of other issues, but this is definitely one I've been poking on.
Because something I didn't realize until I got interested in this was, like, your task force meeting was open to the public. Anybody can go and participate in what the city leaders are doing. You have a chance to speak up.
Anyone can come to any council meeting, and at every council meeting there is a public comment time, and you have 5 minutes to talk about what you want the council to hear you say. Come talk about it. Come say sexual assault and sexual violence is not going away in our community. Do not forget about the victims. What are you doing? Can we get a community report? Give us a little time to get things rolling so there's something to report, but don't give us too long that you think that we're not doing anything.
Stay on top of it.
Yes, ma'am.
That's what we're going to do.
Okay.
So I once again want to remind you that you can donate to my expenses for making this podcast. I really wanted to have a good web presence and give a list of resources. That's kind of been where most of my expenses have gone, just to the website. It really doesn't cost that much to produce a podcast, but it has cost something. And I have a donate button. You can just dump some money into my PayPal account. I wish that I had something to offer you in return, but I don't, except for the hard work that I've put into this and bearing my soul to the world. And that I don't think has cost me as much as I thought it would. So I'm glad that I did it. And I'm glad that I've been able to help some people. And I encourage you to make a podcast. I encourage you to continue the conversation. Don't forget about rain.org, rain with two N's, and you can call them at 1-800-656-HOPE. Thank you for joining me. I'm Julie Ballou, and this is Rape the Podcast.